So why don't you guys tell us how Raga Twins got its start?
The Raga Twins got started in 1990. Before that, it was just Flinty, Badman and Demon Rockers juggling on a sound in London, Hackney, called Unity Hi-Fi. We played all over the country, you know what I mean? And we had chances to go to abroad, but it didn't work out like that. But, you know, we were still one of the biggest sound systems in London, in England. Actually, we had a, you know, very good fan base, you know what I mean? We made a few, went to the studio a few times, made a few tracks. But it weren't enough for us because, you know, we weren't doing enough music. We weren't doing enough recording. And, you know, it came to 1989, New Year's Eve, or New Year's Day, and I said, turned to my brother, and I said, this is not enough. We've got to come out of this. We've been doing this for 10 years and we've got nowhere. So, you know, we've got to come out of this and, like, look for something that we get more recordings where we're more recording artists than just, like, MCs chatting on the sound, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
At that time I was working because I was on the sound, but I had my job. You know, man got to feed his youth, you know what I mean? And look after himself, you know what I mean? So I was in a shop working, and Smiley from Shut Up and Dance came in the shop, and he said to me, I've got a sample that I want to put in a tune, but I've come to see if I can get your permission. So I said, yeah, man, that's no problem. So I asked him what kind of music it was. And at that time, Daddy Freddy was doing some, like, hip-hop ragga thing, and Rebel MC was doing his hip-hop thing, which had was hints of reggae music in it. So I like that sort of sound, and these guys, Shut Up and Dance, they came from the sound system. They knew the sound system culture. They knew where we was coming from. So I said to him, look, yeah, you can use that, no problem, as long as I can you can do something for us. He goes, yeah, man, no problem. I said, listen, it's not just me, it's me and my brother. He said, yeah, bring him down. And we went down to his base, sat down, chat. When we got there, we realized we knew each other, because he went to school near my brother. I went to a different school outside of Hackney. Flinty was in a school in Hackney, and the other guys went to a school down the road. So we all knew each other. And so, you know, it was like easy to talk and, you know, listen to what they want from us and hear what we want from them. And, you know, we came out with Spliffhead and Hooligan 69, and, you know, the rest is history, you know what I mean?
Now, you guys are attributed, you and Flinty attributed to the creation of jungle music as a genre. Now, what exactly is jungle music according to the source?
Jungle music is like sped up breaks with reggae influence, solely reggae influence. Which made jungle music. So you'd have maybe reggae samples, or you'd have a reggae bass line, reggae riffs. That really made up the jungle sound, which was really taken from the acid days, where the breaks were fast. So they took the breaks but just changed the beat. So when we joined Shut Up and Dance and we put reggae into the music, then a lot of people started doing it, and as it went on, it just formed into jungle. But it wasn't like we went to Shut Up and Dance and said, yeah, we're going to do jungle. It kind of just formed into that.
So it was a work in progress. It wasn't something that was like pre-thought or something that was just a brilliant idea one day.
No, it wasn't pre-thought. It just, you know, it just formed into that. Because what happened, When a lot of these people started using reggae samples, R&B samples and that, a lot of people from the from the reggae side who used to go reggae or R&B dances or that, and that they started to feel the music, because obviously they can relate to it because it's got that. So, you know, more people started coming over to the scene, and you know, it needed a name, and the name jungle was floating about, but nobody didn't really want to use it because of the controversy of the word. Because back in the 80s, black people were called jungle bunnies. Our music was called jungle music. It was called jungle music. We called it that anyway, but you know what I mean? So nobody really wanted to use it. But Paul Ibiza from Ibiza Records, he was like the first man I know to put Jungle on the label itself when he released a tune, and he put Jungle on the thing. So from that day, you know, everybody started just using the term Jungle, and it just stuck. You know, it really at the end of the day, it was like two fingers stick up to the industry saying, "Yeah, we're going to name our music Jungle. We don't care what you say." Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Now, how has it evolved to what it is now? Because I also hear hints of dubstep, EDM, and even some rock in your latest single, Vigilante.
Yeah, from Jungle, it kind of like, because it brought a lot of like bad boys from different genres, as Flint said, from reggae music, from R&B, you know what I mean? From all kinds, and like some of the bad guys was coming there, and it started to get a bit peak, you know what I mean? So what happened, a lot of the producers and DJs said, like, we need to change this. So they started to take out the reggae and the R&B influence and just started to kind of just make a drum and a bass beat with like a synth sound. You know what I mean? Something to bring the melody. And at first, they started to call it intelligent music. But what's intelligent about a drum and a bass and a thing? Come on, it's not that intelligent. And then, and then it just became drum and bass. And that was like 96, 97. It became drum and bass. And like it got out, or it worked, because For the raves and everything, it got all them bad guys out. They started to go to house and garage and things like that. And it kind of got back to where how it was in the early 90s, where people just come and rave and had a good time. Do you know what I mean? And then from there, drum and bass just stuck. And, you know, I don't really differentiate on the two. You know, Jungle, drum and bass. I'll always say Jungle, drum and bass. It'd always be Jungle first, drum and bass after, because without Jungle, you wouldn't have drum and bass. You know what I mean? So, drum and bass is just a roll on from Jungle. You know what I mean? An evolution from Jungle, but still now, you know, you got people now making new Jungle, which has got like newer sound of Jungle. You know what I mean? So Jungle thing's never gonna die. It's always gonna be there, and there's more old school Jungle raves now than there has ever been. You know what I mean? Because people, you know, a lot of the older lot that stopped going are now coming back.
Yep, the Jungle will always be the root, basically.
Definitely, yeah, it's always the root. Definitely.
Always the root. It always goes back to Jungle.
Even the people that couldn't get into the Jungle scene, they tried and they didn't. Then when the Jungle died down, they moved over to Garage, so Garage was formed, and then so that's a branch off of Jungle. Then from Garage, you got Grime, Two Step. So it's, you know, it's all stemmed from Jungle. Jungle is the seed of all the music. Then you got Dubstep, and then, you know, so all stems
all
from the Jungle
scene. From the Jungle scene.
Nice. Now, with your new single, Vigilante, you've got four versions, correct? You've got the original and then three remixes from Serial Killers, Martron, and Trufix.
Yeah.
Now, all right. Now, moment of truth time. Which one do you guys like the best? The original?
The original, yeah.
The original is always the best, but
they're all wicked. They're all good. In their different ways. But.
Yeah, I have to, man. You have to. You always. It's hard to pick your favorite kid. Is how it is.
Yeah, but nah, them guys has done some sick work on the remixes, though. Trust.
Definitely. Now, what's it like hearing somebody else take your music and then make something else out of it? Not much less three other times.
It's nice, especially when it's done properly and it's done nice. Like all the remixes, I love them all. You know what I mean? And it hasn't drifted too far from the original. It's always got the original sound in it. You know what I mean? The vocals and everything. No, nothing's been changed. Just like sometimes the pitch on the voice, but more time it's just if you keep it, you know, not too close, but you know, keep the same original blend in it. I ain't got no problem with that. And, as I said, I like them. I think they've done very good work with it.
Were you surprised at all? Like, when you heard the remixes, thinking to yourself, like, that's something I never thought of, what they just did.
Well, yeah, definitely on the serial killers one, where they've, it kind of sound, just sounds like a reggae tune, really, which is great for us as well, because that's our background. But yeah, what they done with that, I would have never thought it would have been like that. Nah, definitely not.
Nice. Now, something I've got to point out with the Raga Twins, like, I'm just blown away by when I was reading your bio, man, you guys opened up for James Brown. I'm like, oh my God, what was that like? Well, I mean, did you meet him? I mean, and what was that like? Because the guy's like a national treasure.
We at that time, we'd done an album with a group called Us Three, and they had like just blown up in the States. And right, yeah, so we done an album called Rinsing Lyrics with them. It was signed to a major. Everything was going well. We was getting some good shows. One day they said, yeah, you're going to Norway to do it. Open up for James Brown. James Brown. Are you sure? You sure it's not Bobby Brown or some other Brown? James Brown. You know what I mean? So they say, yeah. So excitement. You know what I mean? Couldn't wait. You know what I mean? And the thing is, my passport had run out. I had to go down to Petit France and stay there all day. I weren't moving till I got back my passport, and I got my passport on the Thursday. On the Thursday, and we flew out on the Saturday. And yeah. He amazing brother. Trust, amazing brother. You know what I mean? The way he performs, and everything has to be precise. He's
even serious. The sound check was serious.
The sound check was just the main show.
He just stood there in the sound check, and any wrong note, you know, he just point his finger at the man, and you know that's like $250 down the drain.
Yeah, they take the dude out back and kill him, don't they?
We saw the cape move and everything. You know, it was brilliant.
Sick. And, you know, we're right brilliant. Up close, because you know we're right up close at this, right at the front. You know what I mean? You know, when you go shows, sometimes you're at the back. Like, we're right at the front when he's doing his thing.
Listen, this dude drove his car got drove in onto the back of the stage. Yeah.
Yeah.
The limo drove into the place onto the back of the stage.
Ice hockey stadium or something.
Which is tremendous. We spoke with him.
Did you talk to him? I mean, did you get to meet him?
Man. We was doing our sound check and he was listening. He said, hey, I like your stuff, man.
Oh, man. See,
the only thing, all right, listen, it's always in my heart, but our manager at the time, you know, because we bought cameras. Them time, there weren't no digital camera age. It was just like, we just bought some disposables from the airport. Take as much photos as you can. And we took a whole load, like 25 photos each. He lost the camera.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Oh, man. I would never forget that. So, I mean, I got to ask, I mean, you talked to him, right? I mean, what specifically did he say? Because I would remember every word. And also, does he, you know, I can't help but think that he talks like he sings.
He talks exactly how he sings.
Oh, my God, man.
Like, you know, things like, you know, you guys are young, you know, keep doing your thing, you know what I mean? You know, never stop, you know what I mean? Even when things ain't going good for you, just keep doing your music, because music is the food of life. And, you know what I mean? He just gave me so much inspiration to carry on, because at that time, to tell you the truth, I was feeling like jacking it in anyway. Mm-hmm. But no. But yeah, he gave me so much inspiration, and do you know what I mean? Just spoke to us about where he come from and everything. We didn't have much time with him because he'd done his thing and we'd done our sound check, and then we just had about a half hour to talk. But everybody wanted to talk to him, so, you know, we just we got like a 10, 15 minutes with him, which with James Brown, that's a lifetime, you know what I mean? I thought we hit the jackpot when we toured with Shabba Ranks, you know what I mean? But that, you know, and that Shabba Ranks, don't get me wrong, that was big, because we toured with Shabba Ranks for 2 weeks in England, and we'd only been going, a year and a half, and we got the gig with Shabba Ranks. I couldn't believe it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's something you're going to, like, think of on the, you know, like, on your deathbed.
Yeah. We was only going a year and a half, and we're touring, we're doing Shabba Ranks UK tour. So, you know.
Wow. Now, you guys have also worked with Skrillex. I mean, what's that like? Because, I mean, that guy's another dude that's almost, he's almost at legendary status himself.
Yeah, man, that was wicked. When we got the call for that, that was another like exciting time. You know what I mean? We got the call and we kind of had to still wait like 2 months. Like, is this thing really going to happen? Type of thing. You know what I mean? And then when they called and said, yeah, he's over. He wants us to come in the studio and work with him. That was even better because we thought we'd have just got the rhythm and done the thing over here, sent it back to him and all that. But no, he came over, hired out the studio. And yeah, we was in there, man. He was like, it was funny because when we got in the studio, like we was bigging him up and he was like, no, I'm bigging you up. I'm like, I'm in awe of you guys. You know what I mean? That's what he said to us. So he like calmed us all down, started playing some tunes. He went on the decks and started mixing. And this is all before we started doing anything, like chatting, playing a few beats and that. And then he said, yeah, right, here we go. This is the tune. So he got out the tune. And from the first note, it was like, wow, this tune sounds sick. And he already had the vocals because we done a sample pack, which everybody's killing out at the moment. And he'd taken the vocals off it. So, yeah, so that made it easier as well because he just wanted us to redo the vocal and that and add a bit more to it. And, yeah, while we was in there, our mate was outside, said he was, like, dancing around the studio. The studio was, like, decent-sized room, and he was from corner to corner bouncing around, like, going crazy.
Man. Now, this begs the question, I mean, because you guys have met people that you admire and respect, you know, what do you say to like kids out there today that look up to the Raga Twins, you know, the way people look up, you know, some people look up to people like James Brown and Skrillex, you know, I mean, what would you do in a situation where you're now the mentors?
I'd do exactly what James Brown told me, you know what I mean? Just, you know, if you're serious in this music thing, be serious in it. You know, there's a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of people. My son's doing music right now. Yeah, two of my sons are doing music and they're doing grime music. And, you know, he's always saying to me, it's taking long for things to happen. I said, son, you got to take time. Things don't happen overnight, you know what I mean? You got to put in a lot of work before you even see. You know, it happens for some people straight away, but for some people it takes a long time. And if you're serious in it, you won't ever give up. I mean, we ain't been like mega rich or mega out there, billboards, names, bright lights and all that, but we've been places and we've done some amazing stuff and worked with some amazing artists, you know what I mean? And that's all true hard work and perseverance. So I just tell, you know, someone coming up now, just persevere, take your time, write good material, do good in the music scene. Because you can't just be a horrible guy with a bad attitude and think you're going to get through. You know, your fans, you know, as much as they like the bad boy image, when they see you, they want a hello or something like that. So, you know, just be nice in this game, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that really holds more weight now than it did then, because we're at a precipice in the music industry now where the music is not as much the moneymaker as it once was, because I'm seeing bands all the time that are foregoing labels and just putting their stuff on Spotify and iTunes and Google and Amazon and all that stuff, and there's no hard copies, and more EPs are getting released, you know? Yeah. And then the sustainable money is now coming from swag and touring.
Yeah. You got to be out there performing to make the majority of your money. Well, your steady income, you got to be out there doing tours or doing shows weekly. Definitely. That's definitely true.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think though, on the flip side though, that's kind of a good thing, because think about this, like Raga Twins, you know, or any comparable act can put their stuff, like release it digitally and then promote the crap out of it on Twitter and Facebook and so on and so forth, even in YouTube. I mean, the best marketing tools are free at this point.
Yeah, that's definitely on the flip side. That is definitely good. But you know, it's always good to have a hard copy of something, can it? You know what I mean?
When you look at it, it's still not making as much money as it was back then. Because, you know, You go to the over here we had HMV, Virgin and Tower Record. You go there, you buy someone's single for £1.99, £2.99. Now you can get the single for 71p on iTunes. Do you know what people have to get?
But you think of it like that, and then on the other hand you think like it most probably costs 99p anyway, because for the hard copy you most probably had to pay £2 to get it done. So you know, it kind of works out the same, basically. You know what I mean? So you got to pay to get the product done, innit? So, and then you're gonna. So, say you paid £2 for one CD and sold it for £2.99. You're really making that 99p. You know what I mean? True. So, but you know, it's got to just keep doing the music. The formats and everything, they will change as technology goes on. As we know, everything will change, man. So. You know, you just got to be there ready for the next change.
Well, regularly, we don't do. Everybody loves money. Everybody likes to make money. You like to make, you know, make a good living off of money. But you know, Ragga Twins has always been for the people. We just do this for the love of the game. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, and also going back to digital versus hard copy. I know you guys were just talking about you like the hard copies, and I honestly miss the days of having the big vinyl album and reading the credits while I'm listening to it.
Yeah,
you know, and you remember that smell, that kind of flowery smell that the album had. I mean, I think they actually had a cologne or something they used to spray bomb each one with, like before it got wrapped up in plastic, you know. But I mean, it brings you back to the good old days. I used to love sitting there and listening to tapes and records and CDs and all that stuff in my room when I was a kid, and you know, me and all my friends making cassettes for each other and stuff. And,
yeah. You don't have to do that no more. You just download it.
Yeah, exactly. Now you can just get each other's playlist.
Yeah.
You know. So where do you think the music industry's headed now with that? Because it kind of seems like everything's in a daze. And you guys are the perfect ones to ask for, because you started, you know, like in the early 90s when it was still, you know, when it was still hard copies, when that was the only way you could get music.
As you say, for social and that, it's all good and that, and but you also got the downside where your tune can be put up on a site where it's people are downloading it for free. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's hard. It is really at a bad place at the moment, but it's also steady. It's also you just got to work with what's going on. You know, it's hard to change it, isn't it? You got to just work with what's going on, and I think. If the sites and that can, or who's governing this web thing can stop people from downloading music, it'll get into a better place. But downloading for free, I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, precisely.
But from people can download your music for free, and that it's just gonna be you got fans that want to buy your music anyway, they'll buy it, and then you got people that's. And they just want it for free.
But that's,
even though it's only 99p or 99 whatever cents.
Still, when you flip that, it's just like the other argument with the 2.99 costing the 71p. Because if you got a bunch of friends, 10 friends, and you bought that album back in the day, the other 9 are just going to bring their tape and you're going to copy it for them.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly.
It pretty much that's what you would call downloading back in the day. You just bring your cassette and he'll run your copy. You know what I mean? So you was losing like nine customers right there. You know what I mean? Because they've just got it off the one guy that could buy it. So you know what I mean? Look, it will never stop. You know what I mean?
Music
people always get music for free. You got people that love music, but they ain't spending a penny on it. And you got people that love music and they buy everything. They're not really interested in downloading. So, you know, you've got all walks of life, isn't it? That's how it goes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I remember, like I said, when I was a kid, if one of my friends had an album and I liked more than one song on it, I would just go out and buy it, you know, like with my next allowance or something. Because, I mean, I love the whole experience of it. I like the cover and, you know, having the whole package.
Well, I used to do that because I used to, I'll never forget, there was an album back in the day, years ago in the 80s. I was still at school, could have been 70s actually. and it was called Fat Man versus Jashaka. Two of the biggest dub sounds in England at that time. And they and a producer called Scientist, with the help of King Jammies, put out this album called Fat Man and Shaka. And I saved up my dinner money for 3 weeks. I went to the shop and I stood up in the shop for like 10 minutes just, you know, because, you know, you had big men coming from work, yeah, with their big wages, standing up in the shop, and every tune played, they put their hand up, yeah, give me one of them. And I stood up there for 10 minutes. I didn't want nobody to think I'd just come in, get my tune and went out. I was standing up there like I'm a big man. I was about 14, yeah? And then, you know, I stood there and I said, I've had enough. I go to the man, yeah, can I have that Jashaka and Fat Man album?
Yeah.
I'd saved up my dinner money that my parents, I'd like starved myself for 3 weeks. I couldn't wait to get home, got home, and I played that for days. It was great. It was sealed and everything. It was the first album I ever bought. First tune I ever bought.
You ever used to buy albums just based on the covers? I've done that. Like, where you find an album that the cover looks so kick-ass that you just imagine the music's just as good and you just buy it.
Yeah, I did buy it, but I always take them back.
No, I did that. You know what's...
As good as the cover.
Yeah, exactly. You know what's funny? Like, when I was a kid, my cousin... I wasn't into heavy metal until my cousin turned me on to Judas Priest. And then I was like, oh, man, yeah, these guys are awesome, man, and stuff. And then I saw this album called Meatloaf, Bad Out of Hell. And I was like, oh, this got to be tougher than Judas Priest. And I, like, went home, and I was like, yeah, this thing sucks, man. this is like Happy Days or something.
I have actually done that a couple times. Seen the cover, you know what I mean? Don't know the artist, but cover does look badass, isn't it? So he must be good, and then you get it and it's crap. But sometimes, yeah, sometimes you get a good one still. Sometimes you get a good one.
That's how I bought my first MLP album. The album cover looked wicked. Never heard of them before. Firing Squad album. The cover just looked wicked. Took it home. It was tremendous. Lucky dip, innit? You know what I mean? Some you win, some you lose.
Yeah, exactly. I did that with Stevie Wonder's Inner Visions. Okay. I was like, oh man, this, and the album was better than the cover. You know, I was like, wow, I was like, this dude's awesome, man. You know, but now with your musical style, see, I'm a guitarist myself, and electronic music is totally alien to me as far as creating. I couldn't create it if I tried. So, how do you write a song, an electronic based song?
Now we don't do the music side of things. We just strictly vocals we work with. So we do strictly vocals. We don't make beats.
Nice. I mean, well, how do you pick a beat then?
Well, my engineer is so wicked that any beat that he comes with, his name's Dean Ogre. Any beat that he comes with, it's like, yeah, we're ready.
Nice. And well, how do you come up with the lyrics over the music then? I mean, do you have a set topic in mind, or do you have everything written?
Sometimes you have stuff written, you know, because, you know, now with these iPhones and iPads, you can sit on the train or in your house and just sit down there. Something comes in your head, you can either voice record it or write it down, and, you know, you get to the studio, you've got about six bars there, and you just carry on with it, and there you go, you've got a lyric, you know what I mean? So most of the time you listen to the tune and catch a vibe from it, you know what I mean? And, you know, start writing, you know.
Yeah, and it's all about the feeling then, about how to get that feeling correct.
Yeah, because back in the reggae days, on the sound system, we used to just write lyrics, innit? We're not making no tunes or anything. You're just writing lyrics to chat on the sound system. And then back in them days, you chat lyrics on the sound system and you know, well, that lyrics can fit a record or something like that, you know what I mean? So that's the same type of format that we use now. We do our jungle raves and that. Might chat our lyrics in a jungle rave, and you know what I mean, and we can think, ah, oh, that lyric there would be good for a tune.
Well, and you know what, I didn't realize this until I heard your music, that reggae and jungle and EDM and, you know, electronic music, they kind of have a symbiosity to them. They almost seem related, because if you listen to the old classics from obviously Bob Marley, but also like Marcus Children and all that other stuff, I mean, they have that same sick capacity about them, that driving groove feel that what you're doing has and what EDM artists have.
Yeah, the thing is that with like, you know, as we brought up on reggae, but like when we went on to jungle, it just fit because it had that reggae element, and it's because it's got the reggae element, and then it's got the breakbeat element. You kind of get to learn how to sit down on a breakbeat. So if something else comes, like say for instance, an EDM tune, it's still got that breakbeat flavor, so you can sit down on it. But it's some of them still have a reggae feel, but some of them don't. And you're riding to that break that you've mastered from doing the jungle thing. So you know it's easy to sit down on it and very comfortable.
And the tempos are fairly close together as yeah. well.
Precisely. Now, what does Raga Twins have coming up? What's the future look like for you guys?
We've got a few singles out at the moment. We've got The Vigilante, obviously. We've got a tune out with North Base. It's called What You're Doing.
On his EP.
It's a lot of features at the moment, but we've got a feature out with OK, which is called The Boot. Barely Alive, which is called... there's too much things I can't remember. Isn't it?
We've got some
big collabs coming up soon yeah. as well.
One with Tiesto, and we got an album because we was working for like 15 years with Aquasky, and we've got an album coming out with them, like a tribute album for the 15 years we've been working with them.
Oslo might be putting out a Badman compilation, a few remixes of Badman. And we got our album, and you know we got a reggae, also like an 80s reggae album that we done with a guy called Wrong Tom. It's Wrong Tom meets Raga Twins, but it's like 80s reggae.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. We got a lot of things, and obviously shows here and there. New Year's we're in Bournemouth in the UK, South, and London at a rave called Moon Dance. Yeah, so yeah, a lot of things going on.
I was waiting for the call to come to the US again.
And then in February, we're going to be over in New Zealand doing Splore Festival.
Splore Festival, yeah.
Man, now if you guys can do New Zealand, you got to do the US, man.
Put the word out, yeah.
Yeah, anybody out there who owns a club, man, get these guys over here.
Yeah, man, we're ready, willing, and able. Come and nice up. US, you know what I mean?
Definitely. Now, where can we find you guys online? I know you guys are on Facebook and Twitter.
The webpage is in process at the moment because we had to build a new one. So that's being worked on at the moment. But yeah, Twitter, Instagram, and the Facebook at the moment.
Nice. Well, thank you, Demon and Flinty, man. I really appreciate what you guys are doing with Raga Twins, and it sounds like you're going to have a great 2016.
Thanks. Yeah, man, enough respect. We got the Jamazine scene, enough respect to all of the US massive Raga Twins, the boat scene. Yeah, we have to come out of the US, come murder down there. So, and I don't mean literally kill people. You know what I mean? Just, yeah.
No, because that would be bad. I think that's illegal here.
So. They won't let you in it when you say
yeah,
that.
I just mean that.
No, they'll keep you here if you do it. You just won't like where they put you.
We come to nice up. Yeah. Met the people them nice, you know what I mean? Nah, yeah, enough respect. We're just doing our thing, enjoying life at the moment, enjoying life in music right now. It's been a great 3 years, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's been a great 20 odd years.